Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you this morning.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
Watching, bated breath on what's going to happen on impeachment.
Yeah.
What if they convict him? Will the police come and put him in prison? Are they going to? I wonder if they'll give him another trial there. But this is not supposed to be a trial. This is a political event.
That is,
to me, probably the understatement, because inevitably over many, many years, they would say, this is not a court of law. Now, this is to get somebody out of office, so it's political. But all of a sudden, you know, could it be as political as this one is?
Yeah.
Wow, this is something else. But one thing that has annoyed me over these last several weeks, the people who are bringing this, the Pelosi types and others, are saying they like to put a very somber, a very serious note to this and say, this effort that we're doing now to impeach the president is our duty. It's a constitutional duty. And they say this, you know, with such sincerity. And, you know, what goes through my mind is, when did they ever vote with the Constitution? Probably 90 times out of 100, they're voting against the Constitution.
Yeah,
but this is very, very serious. And she yesterday was celebrating because she was signing, you know, the papers to send over the challenges to him and send it to the Senate. And when she was doing this, she was signing it letter by each pen and passing out these pens. And guess who attacked her for this? CNN.
Wow.
CNN says, what's she doing? This is not the way you usually do this. You do this when you have a victory and a celebration, and not for something like this. And but the whole thing is, it's in many ways, it comes across as a farce, but there are some serious matters too. If you're a libertarian, you happen to think, well, do these people in Washington ever act outside constitutional law? I remember during the last impeachment, with Clinton. That I had a lot of gripes, and there was a lot of infractions on the Constitution. But that's never the issue, because they're both. What about the wars they start? Republicans and Democrats. Well, what about all this deficit financing and printing of money? All that they can always pause, and pass something, and they've done that to pass budgets, and they do that just recently to make sure that there's more management of tariffs and things like that. So it's to find the proper perspective is something else, because I imagine this is the most politicized impeachment event ever, and it'll be interesting to see how this pans out. So next week will be the big week. Of course, there are going to be some announcements today and swearing in, and we'll see what happens. I'm sure a lot of people will be watching.
You know, it's funny because Pelosi said, we can't wait one moment. We have to impeach him immediately. You know, when the House was in a frenzy, we got to get these witnesses in there. We got to get this done. Then all of a sudden, they got it done, the frenzy, and then all of a sudden, everything just died, remember, before Christmas. Well, what happened? Well, it's urgent. We have to get him out before he continues to abuse his power. Then nothing happened. Weeks passed. She said, well, we have to make sure that we can ensure a fair trial, so that's why we're not going to send the articles over. Probably the reality is that the Christmas distraction, she wanted to get that out of the way so she can continue to put it front and center in the media, because if she's worried about a fair trial, if she's worried about the politicization, well, she just named her impeachment judges, or her impeachment managers, led by Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler, the two most partisan political people in Congress, certainly on the Democratic side. So the whole idea is it's this somberness, and we have to ensure it's a fair trial. And as you say, the pins, that's just like doing high fives. Yeah, we got him, we got him. You know, so she was caught out of character doing that.
Right. The other thing is that the Republicans and the Democrats are doing the same thing, playing games. But some people are lamenting the fact, I guess on the Democratic side, but I don't think this is such a terrible thing, that the Democratic primary is getting all messed up and stalled. And I thought, well, and they said, this is a mess now. What are they going? What are we doing? You know. So, but I don't know. That might not hurt anybody. A little mess up. If the blame is to be placed at Pelosi and some others, what can they do? Well, I mean, it's just what is happening is a result of their bad judgment.
And the whole Democratic primary is such a snoozer anyway. They should be thankful to have some excitement, you know, taking Tulsi Gabbard out of the last debate and not having any kind of actual debate. It's just whether he shake her hand and she wouldn't shake his. Total snooze fest. So this actually probably helped them and get some interest, you know, get someone to focus their hate on again, and that's President Trump. But so where we stand today now, I think, you know, probably about now, they're going to be marching those articles over to the Senate in a very somber way, with long faces. They had to do their duty according to the Constitution. But, you know, there are a lot of questions that still go unanswered. And because we go live, we can't give all the answers. We don't know what the rules are going to look like. Specifically, we don't know the rules on witnesses in the Senate. And that's probably one of the most significant things. And I don't know if you saw this. I saw an interview with Senator Paul where he talked about some different possible scenarios for witnesses, one of them being that every single witness will be subject to a vote requiring 51 senators vote in favor of the witness. And he was kind of wondering out loud if I might actually deny some big witnesses that might be, you know, quite useful to the president, someone like Hunter Biden, someone like this alleged whistleblower, bring him up, let's cross-examine him. You might have some Republicans peel away and say, no, we don't want to turn this into a circus. I think McConnell already said that. So there really is a lot to be determined here in this next few hours.
Right. There's one Republican senator has suggested that the Democrat candidates, I think there's four senators, that have to attend the impeachment process or the Senate conviction process. And she said that they should be excused or recuse themselves because they have a conflict of interest because they have a political opinion. And I thought this has to be about the funniest thing in the world. As if, can you imagine what would have happened if somebody had a strongly biased political opinion in the House when they were, convicting him of impeachment, voting on impeachment? I mean, if anything, this whole thing has made it more political than ever before. But I think recusing somebody, that's not going to happen. I don't. Of course, what the Republican senator wanted to do is reduce the number of Democrats and try to weaken their vote. So that's not going to happen. I wouldn't think it would be a good idea, but I think it's entertaining anyway.
I wonder if there is anyone in the Senate right now, there may be theoretically, who's sitting there thinking, you know, I'm just going to give this an even look. I'm not sure. I'm not, I don't know either way. Particularly in some of the purple states, it does make you wonder. But, you know, we talk about the show of pageantry, the somberness, the Constitution has to be obeyed. But there really is very little chance that there will be a conviction and a removal from office. They would need 67 senators, and you may get a couple of Republicans peeling away, but you're not going to get that 67 because the whole thing is really kind of a sham from the beginning, isn't it? They're impeaching him on purely, as you've said many times, purely political things and completely ignoring the actual violations that the president has done, because they actually agree with the bad stuff that he's done, the unconstitutional stuff that he's done. So they're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Right. You know, the markets have been doing quite well. If you had chaos like it happened in the 70s with Nixon, it was such a negative, and they knew the president was going to leave, and the market was crashing. It was really, really bad. That's not happening now. The stock market is skyrocketing, abnormally so, from my opinion. But I think that the main reason that is the Federal Reserve is accommodating. But others have suggested, and I tend to agree with this, that they're already discounting the election, that there's not going to be a disruption. They're not going to get rid of Trump. There's not going to be, there will be a continuation. But since it's sort of abnormal due to the credit inflation that we have, that I wouldn't be surprised to see this market going up continuously, there then the correction coming, you know, after the not final news break. Conceivably, you know, people would say, well, people voted for Trump and the markets are high and everybody is happy, that then, for the various reason, there has to be a correction. You might see it then. But the other thing is it might happen before the election, which would be very harmful to Trump, even though the Democrats are so weak. You know, it's not too easy to get behind some moderate middle of the road or get behind a Biden or a Warren or something like that. They, you know, it looks pretty bad. You know, if Trump has his baggage and his problems, but he makes these other people aren't much of an option, I'll tell you, from the Senate, the Democrat side.
You may not have seen this, but someone put together a montage of all of Biden's statements during the last debate, and it was totally,
that was a video.
Yeah, it was hilarious. So unintelligible.
Oh, that was. I almost felt embarrassed by it. You know.
And, you know, I mean, we have our own hiccups when we go live, too, but that was I feel a little bit better about our show watching that. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, some of the things that maybe he should be impeached for. And there was a great piece. I don't know if you saw it. The judge wrote, Judge Napolitano had a piece, antiwar.com picked it up. But he made a good case for an actual impeachment. He wasn't making the case, but it was all about the shifting rationale, the shifting justification for the murder of Soleimani. And he points out that, you know, of course, it was a slam dunk. He was going to hit four embassies. It was imminent. It was coming. It was immediate. Then we find out that actually President Trump signed off on it in June. So there couldn't have been immediate. It's already been 7 months later. But Napolitano said Trump sent Haspel, the Joint Chiefs, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Pompeo, Esper, all over to brief Congress on the justification. And he said during the briefing, there was never mention of the four embassies that he was about to attack, supposedly, or any kind of imminence of it. And that was shocking, and I think that's when Senators Lee and Paul were ticked off over the whole thing. But then Trump, you know, took it up even higher and just basically admitted. He said, you know, they're working hard to determine, the Democrats are working hard to determine whether or not the future attack by Soleimani was imminent or not. And my team was in agreement. The answer is both a strong yes, but it doesn't really matter because of his horrible past, is what Trump tweeted. And then Napolitano says, the boast of killing the general because of his horrible past sent off alarm bells in the Justice Department, because it doesn't justify killing a person who's not engaged in violence at the time. And I'll just read one more sentence that the judge wrote, which is pretty troubling, and if, you know, the Congress should take it up and think about it. These shifting justifications are contrary to reason and cannot survive a simple cross-examination. When did we start killing generals from countries with which we're not at war? Never in our history. When did we start killing foreign generals because of their horrible past? Never in history. How can the government use the 2002 authorization for military force, which stated target was Iraqi WMDs, but whose true target was Saddam Hussein, as a legal justification to kill a non-Iraqi general 18 years later? Cannot legally or rationally do so. So these are the real things, but they all agree on this. Yeah. So
the other thing that bugs me a whole lot is the fact that, you know, there may be a legitimate criticism of Trump on a foreign policy issue or something like that, if they can find some technicality. But they never compare it to what the process is when the Democrats are in charge. Yeah. They do like this whole thing of assassination.
Yeah.
Well, Obama started all that. He started this hit list business.
Yeah.
He's even established the principle of assassinating American citizens.
Yeah.
And yet they do it with a straight face. It's almost like they have no conscience or a brain. I don't know which.
Yeah.
But they do that constantly, and almost everything is political. And I think this right now, we see this mess because I think the mess is going to get a lot worse, and we have a breather right now financially. But it's my theory about the financial bankruptcy and the moral bankruptcy. And when you look at this, when it's bankrupt and they have no principles and they have no anchor. So with the monetary system, no anchor for how much money we should be spending, no anchor on what the goal of government ought to be, and no anchor on limitations limitation of executive power. So they do anything, and then they justify it. And I think this mess that RussiaGate. You know, as a result of the last election, yeah. which is ongoing, it's going to continue to go on. Trump will probably win. It'll continue, the day before he's sworn in again. You know, it's going to continue. So, but I think that is a reflection that there's just so few people there that, you work from a moral principle. And that's, to me, is a sad situation. It can't be changed unless the character of the people that are there change. And that's probably not the job of Pelosi. She's participates in all that nonsense.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think as we sort of wind down this kind of preview to what might happen, it's probably good to think about how it all started. This all started with a July 25th phone call from President Trump to the incoming Ukrainian President Zelensky. They had a talk. We read the transcript. We read everything. We read it carefully. We were told that there was a whistleblower who heard it and thought it was a quid pro quo. Well, we read it. I didn't see one. I don't think most people saw a quid pro quo. Trump has a weird way of talking, but I didn't see anything like this. So now that's all forgotten, and we're at a different point now where we don't talk about that. It's all gone by the wayside. Now we talk about abuse of power. Based on what? The transcript that we read that didn't really show anything, and obstruction of Congress because the president said, well, you can't automatically subpoena people in the White House. We need to have a ruling from the Supreme Court on this, which has been done in the past. So it really is on a house built on sand, and it's a distraction. So I would say, our question was guilty as charged. I would say guilty, but not as charged.
There you go. And I'd go along with that, and he's not going to be kicked out of office. The American people have a chance to decide on something better or something worse, and that'll be in the fall. But thinking about that phone call, the charges are made that he did something, and they subjectively decide what was in the president's mind on why he withheld, even though the timing doesn't add up on this withholding of money, because they never proved anything of a quid pro quo. But I was thinking, well, what if he knew he was dealing with a bad person? And what if he knew that people might demagogue it if I hold his money back, and use it against me? I better send them the money, send the money to the bad guy. And as far as I'm concerned, all this is bad money and bad guys because it's taken from the American people. But if a president did that, then once again, they're going to have to say, he said, well, I did it, subconsciously, consciously he did it. He'll say, and people say, well, he did it, to protect his political career and help himself politically. So it goes anyway because it's subjective. And that is a big problem. And there's a lot of subjectivity. Ultimately, politics has a lot of subjectivity to it, because I was seeing the other day on they were talking about a race, and the person that did the best in a contest was the person that was the friendliest. And then when I thought about presidential candidates, when you think about Ronald Reagan, he gets a lot of credit. I have problems with his foreign policy and his spending, but anyway, he was indeed probably one of the friendliest presidents we ever had, and people really liked him. If you compare him with the attitude of a Bernie Sanders or a Pelosi, they just don't come across as real friendly. And so there's a lot of subjectivity. And I tell people when they come and ask me, how do I run for Congress and this? I said, well, believe in something and then just do and let the chips fall where they're made. I think that's what you should do, is have strong belief. But you also have to realize that to get votes, people want to know a little bit about you, a little bit in addition, because most people, don't get into the Federal Reserve and monetizing debt and non-interventionist foreign policy. But the people who are really interested, they do. So there is a lot of subjectivity going on, and the subjectivity going on now with the impeachment and the trial is atrocious. It's just way out of control. It makes no sense whatsoever. And yet the country will survive it, this trial and what's going on now. But what we might not survive are the attitudes that Republicans and Democrats have regarding the system. You know, the spending, the deficits, the Federal Reserve, invading countries, assassinating other leaders, having an executive branch of government that's skyrocketing, and pretending everybody's a constitutionalist now and we have to do it, and then doing whatever they want. I mean, that's where the real crisis is, and that is the part where both major parties agree with, and they just play games with the people and pretend there's a real battle going on, you know, for survival, for saving the Constitution. You have to listen to Nancy Pelosi if you care at all about the Constitution. Well, I think there's a growing number of people who are getting skeptical. I imagine the people that watch our station and our program here at the channel probably are pretty skeptical of getting the results on the road that we're going on in Washington, and that they'd like to see a change. And in particularly, our interest here has been to have a non-interventionist foreign policy. And believe me, if we would have had a non-interventionist foreign policy, if we'd had one, boy, a lot of people would have been cheated out of entertainment, because none of this mess would have happened, because there would be no foreign there. There'd be no shenanigans. Our troops would be at home, and there wouldn't be a moral and financial bankruptcy if that were the case. But we'll keep plugging along, and we need your help to encourage others to join us in this effort to promote a non-interventionist foreign policy and promote the cause of liberty. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Please come back soon to the Liberty Report.